all CEOs, me included, we don't actually know what we're doing.
They're all sharks. So all you got to do, though, is know shark behavior.
I don't think we've ever talked about this before.
We can capture all of the wallet share.
First place you start is with the product.
That's just the first nut.
This is the Capital Stack.
Hey, everybody. This is David Paul, the host of the Capital Stack podcast, where I talk to founders, operators, and investors about all things value creation in vertical SaaS. We talk about companies, we talk about the capital stack that's on them and people's relationship to such capital stack. So I am talking today to Lisa Diaz, who is the founder of Turf Advisory, which is an advisory service that provides business development, partnership opportunities, as well as capital to early stage companies in a sector that I'm trying to learn more about, which is the construction industry. America seems to be grossly underbuilt. We have lots of tailwinds. People need housing, as well as there's a lot of government cheese to be eaten, thanks to the current administration. And so who's going to be the beneficiary of this cheese? Lisa, who's going to eat the cheese? Are you going to eat the cheese?
Who's going to eat the cheese? Hopefully we all eat a little bit of cheese. But actually, let me sort of tell you, there's cheese, but guess what? There's not enough cheese for the size of our problem. So everyone's been mesmerized by the bridge collapsing, right? Which was hit by a boat, which is clearly the problem. But if you look at our bridges in America, on average, they are 50 years old and deteriorating and in very poor quality. So according to the American Society of Engineers, it's going to take $2.6 trillion for us to get our infrastructure into state of good repair. As you mentioned, we got $1.2 trillion. So in terms of my guesstimate, we're short $1.4 trillion. So unless we learn to allocate those capital dollars in a more efficient way, we're going to be chronically behind the rest of the world, particularly in Asia. And if you spend time going to airports in Southeast Asia or in Turkey, the Istanbul airport and all the connectors are kick-ass. We need to figure out how to allocate those capital dollars more efficiently. And that's why I decided to focus on construction technology.
So we're taking a look, and we're basically looking right now from a government perspective. Governments allocating dollars to municipalities to upgrade their infrastructure. How do the government planners like prioritize essentially what they want to work on versus what they don't want to work on?
I suspect it has to do with everything else in the world, politics, right? So where there are the most pressing needs and the most powerful voices, they tend to get a larger part of the cheese. So one of the biggest projects that's going to be on the offering is here in New York. It's the Gateway Project. And there's a tunnel between New York and New Jersey that was damaged by a hurricane. And it's basically moving. Kind of not a great scenario. And it's going to cost about $30 billion to get it repaired and get it to a state of good repair. And I suspect that Chuck Schumer, who, as you know, has been in a powerful position in the Senate for years, has been very important advocate for improving and spending money on Gateway. And also Gateway is part of the fact that Joe Biden, who's also known as Amtrak Joe, is very focused on improving the rail corridor in on the East Coast.
I've never heard of him referred to as Amtrak Joe. I've heard a lot of other things, but not Amtrak Joe.
Yeah, he's Amtrak Joe. He was vice president. So the story on Biden is he used to take Amtrak from his home in Delaware to go to D.C., so he historically has been a big fan of public transportation. He's a big rail fan, and he's actually really important for infrastructure. And I don't know if you've noticed, but our infrastructure, our airports in New York City were in terrible shape of disrepair. And what ended up happening is Joe Biden was broadly talked about in the press that LaGuardia was like a third world airport. And yeah. David, it was terrible.
Yeah, LaGuardia is terrible.
Well, it was. It's very nice now. So what happened was, you know, we in New York, we get our, you know, get our, and that time Andrew Cuomo was governor. He didn't like his airport to be called a third world country. And what ended up happening is the start was to work on the upgrade of LaGuardia. But what's happened since then is we're upgrading the process of upgrading LaGuardia, JFK, as well as Newark. So when you come to New York and when you come to the LaGuardia, it's way, way nicer and it's modern. So I think the reality of infrastructure, it has to be, there's more demand than is supply of capital. And you need to, the way it gets allocated, I think it's like everything in life, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Mm-hmm. So we in New York, we're squeaky and we got a lot of grease.
Yeah, you get a lot of cheese. So, and then you go out into market and essentially you bid these projects out. You have contractors from various different scopes and skills bid on these big infrastructure projects. So if I was to say to you, give me a layman's view on...
Let me give you a layman's view, okay? So first of all, you need to understand there's two different types of construction, okay? There's vertical, which is buildings, right? And then there's horizontal. And horizontal are, as it sounds, it's bridges, it's tunnels. And the expertise is different in one versus the other. Some of them do crossover, but usually you are a civil or a vertical contractor. So the first thing that happens is the agencies, if you're doing government work, they'll put out an RFP. And that's a request for proposal. So the agency will give a scope of work they're looking for. And usually the first people that are asked to join the party are the engineers. So this is the engineers and the architects will do an initial schematic of the project that they're looking to get bids on. And often one of the big problems is it's not complete. So there's a lot of guesswork on behalf of the contractors that are bidding on it, right? So they got on the RFP, they put in their proposal, and they're on something called a short list. And in the short list, they have to argue why they're better than the other guy. So I used to work at Wall Street, and we did something called equity capital markets, and we would always compete against Morgan Stanley versus Goldman Sachs versus JP Morgan. So then the primes, as they call it, the leads contractors have to go in and prove why they're better than their peers in the comparison, right? Often a lot of these contractors don't actually do the work. They're doing management of the site. So they're doing project management. So they are managing JFK, and then they have subs that work behind them. So they'll have specialists in electrical, mechanical, plumbing. And a lot of times, like before I started doing construction tech, I thought, you know, when it said Turner built this or AECOM built it, I thought that there were, you know, employees of those organizations that actually put the hammers in the ground. Most of the time it's not. They work through the trades or subcontractors. So what'll happen is there's a lot of room for error, right? And in the old days, it depends on how government contracts were awarded. It used to be the lowest price. And what ended up happening was people would bid super low price, and then they have change orders. And the change order would allow them to make up their too aggressive margin, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that happened, again, this is because of Cuomo, they moved to something called design build. And in design build, it means that the architect, the engineer, and contractor have to come together and give an integrated bid. So it's of all in price. So they couldn't be like, oh, it's your fault. It's your fault. The design part wasn't the same way. And the idea behind that is that the onus is around those major three partners to come up with the price. And if it goes wrong, it's on them. It's not on the government.
Mm-hmm. And so you know, it sounds to me that the contractor would then probably RFP that scope to a group of their subcontractors to do the work.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, does the project manage, like, where's the value captured? I mean, is it captured on the contractor level, the GC level? Because like, how much could they possibly mark up the trades and the material?
Is it, well, like 50%, I mean, to give you a sense of margins, I mean, the margins, that was part of the reason I came into this business, right? So the general margin for vertical construction, I mean, it's very low. It's like 4 to 5%. And you can, and you know, you can get your money, Citibank will give you 6% money market rate. And then civil is probably 7 to 8%. So this is very low margin business.
That's net, right?
Yeah. So, and there are times when they can't capture it and they lose money on projects, right? So one of the big goals I had with getting into construction technology is if you could increase these margins by 1%, and you're talking about a $2 billion project, right? So if your margin can go from 4% to 5%, 1 basis point is a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you think about, you know, the mentality of people in who are building, who are the project managers, their mindset as a general rule is looking to make this best of breed, beautiful piece of infrastructure. You know, it's not as much as we at Wall Street are saying, like, what's the Fed funds rate? What is the rate return relative? It's a bit of a different mentality. That's in public sector work. In private sector work, okay, this is the private industry, they're looking for rates of return. So if I'm a developer, I want to make money, right? So they're much more aggressive and mindful of what the costs are. So it's more competition for margins and more scrutiny on the value proposition. So what happens often in with property developers, it's not the lowest price, it's who they feel comfortable working with. So just on a personal basis, if you've ever done, you know, a renovation of your house, it's a very personal kind of experience. It's like, who's your best doctor? Often what will happen is certain general contractors always work with certain developers, or they always work with certain academic institutions or hospital complexes. So it's a little different, this vertical private sector versus the public sector civil, which is much more, it's a heavier hand of the government.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And so when you look at a business like construction, which is materials and then labor, you're mm-hmm. really trying to make efficiencies with technology and I would just guess workflow. I mean, and then like how many dollars do you think you can scrape from that? Like how much inefficiency?
You can scrape a lot. I mean, but let's talk about it. We're talking 3.5-4% margin, right?
Right.
So if you can just eke out, you know, if your margins on think about it, 4% on $1 billion. It's a lot of money, right? So that mm-hmm. incremental margin is very impactful. So like, if you think about, it depends on your philosophy. So we like to kind of go through the process. So one of the first ports of call is labor, right? Labor is a very big component cost.
Right.
So understanding who's on your job site, how many hours do they work? Is it regular time? Is it time and a half? Is it overtime? What materials do they touch? Which technology do they, you know, like what equipment do they use? So there's a company that we really like called Riskcast. And it was formed by a guy whose name is Alec Thompson and his partner, Reggie Archibald. And they were both working at Skanska. And they were very frustrated because one guy was in the field, which was Alex. He was counting the workers. And Reggie is in the back office trying to look at the analytics and the value of, you know, what margins they're making. And they didn't have a good capture of labor, which is a very large component cost. And that's why they created Riskcast. So that's kind of first step in the journey because of labor. And then you can run analytics to say the projected costs of running, of building this the stadium, and you can have a line to say whether it's going over, never goes under, but it's way over, and you don't have to you have real-time assessment to understand where overruns are happening. So like another type of company we work with, all about pain points. So one of the big problems on job sites is delivery of materials. Like north of 40% of the cost of a project is materials. And in other industries, like if you look at retail, right, you can go to, if you went to CVS and you had a bad, I don't know, like you had a bad Ambien or Advil, they can like track to the factory where this like, you know, bad pill came from or bad, you know, yogurt or whatever. In construction, as a general rule, they have like post-its, they have a whiteboard, and they don't have a robust tracking of all these materials. So what often happens is that they have a whiteboard and a guy will write in, oh, I want to have like, I want to have this curtain wood all delivered at this time. And then the other guy's like, oh no, I want that. They erase it. So one of the companies we work with is focused on logistics to figure out what's the time slots of things coming in. Can we take a picture and do quality control to make sure that these 100 cabinets were still in good shape? Because what happens a lot of times, the cabinet comes, a month later, they go to install it, and 50 of them were broken. And everyone's like, whose fault was it? Did it come broken? Did they break it on site? Like, that's a problem. And the problem is not just the cabinets. It's you've hired all these people to come in and install the cabinets.
Yeah, no one's owning it.
That would run into overage. So what we really try to do is to work with a universe of clients to figure out, like, what are their pain points? Because a lot of the challenges of construction technology, and again, it's people who don't have real life experience. Like, we spend a lot of time on job sites. We talk to people and I'm like, what do you, like, what's your problem? Like, another problem that we hear that's common is people, they're like, there's too many apps. I'm on app overload. I just can't take any more apps, right? And so what they need to do is have less is more. So for my construction company, I want to have a single pane of glass. So my team doesn't have to like relearn all the different apps. So we work with a company called Aquifer, which is a connector. Because some clients want to use Procore, some clients want to use Autodesk. So for example, if I'm a GC and I like Procore, and then the client wants to use Autodesk, it means I have to re-input all the same data. And David, what do you think the chances of fat fingers and mistakes? It's huge, right?
Right.
So what they're trying to do is work to have connections. So when you think about what construction technology or any, especially in construction, is going to work, people have to feel some level of discomfort to want to do something different.
Right.
And if you can't find this, you know, there's always ways that you can do things better, but people are creatures of habit, right? I just came from Citibank, right? I've been a Citibank customer since I graduated from college. They changed the interface on the ATM machine. And I was like, what the hell with this ATM machine? And I they said it's caused pandemonium across Citibank because like how I looked at my accounts changed. And I've been like moving money around for years. So the Citibank guy had to show me how to do it, which is a different way. That's annoying as a customer, right? So it's the same thing for construction technology. Unless I'm feeling some pain that I want things to be done better, I would rather my Citibank account to be how it was before because I didn't have to think about it.
Yeah. And to your point, there is, there is these problems that exist in a lot of industries, especially industries that have been along for a long time, like construction. These pain points aren't new. They've always been there, right? And so, like, what is the inflection point where they're going to make a move? And generally, like, how I've always seen it is, you know, there has to be, like, a technology innovation or a market, something that happens with the market that causes it. Because if the problem isn't managed or measured, to quote my friend Jen Abel, like, it's just not – it's The pain doesn't have legs, right? It's a pain point, but it's not good enough.
But like, let's talk, it's not just construction, okay? Like, during COVID, my grandmother and your grandmother and your mother all learned how to use Zoom or Google Meets or what, because why? If they didn't do that, they wouldn't see you, right? That was a pain point, right? So, and actually COVID was good for construction because for the first time, now they have Teams meeting. They didn't used to do that. That was not a thing, right? So again, you have to think about pain points on a job site. So one of the things which is a pain point for construction is they have to conform to ESG, right? So they need to be able to track, are the materials they're buying, have they been done by child labor or slavery? So if by 2026, they can't track that or show that, they get penalties and they're going to have problems, right? So, you know, like let's talk Turkey, right? Do they really, 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 really care? Of course they do, but maybe not so much. They just want to make sure their curtain wall is like on the job site to go in the building, right? But a lot of times curtain wall comes from other countries. So now if you put the curtain wall in and someone has been abused because of the curtain wall, you're in trouble. So that's a pain point. You know, maybe some of them are very altruistic. Maybe they want to do a great job. But the reality is they have to deal with it.
Right. And because there was a legislative change, not because, you know, it's a pain point, but because there's actually something, a pivotal event that happened.
Yeah, because regulation changed. So that becomes a pain point for them. So to your point about counting, they didn't have to justify before whether the materials that they bought were subject to child labor laws or slavery laws. That like wasn't a thing. And now because they have to. So like another problem, climate change. I don't know. It rains like every other day. The winter's a summer. You know, I mean, there's storms all the time, right? So one of the big problems for owners, like if you're in Florida, right? I mean, a lot of those buildings are going to be uninsurable over time.
Right.
So how do you address that, right? You know, how do you think about pricing risk, right? You can't just... How do you figure out how the piece of infrastructure is going to respond to heavy water flows? You wait till it happens and then look back and you're like, oh man, this is a problem. Like one of the things technology will offer, you can do something called a digital twin, which is a virtual replica.
I just learned about those. They're pretty cool.
Of infrastructure. And then you stress test it. You're like, okay, it's going to rain, 10 inches in an hour and a half. Like this is what's going to happen. And you can start to do scenario analysis to figure out like what's the consequences on the infrastructure. So, for example, I have a friend who's working on upgrading some of the elevator systems in Manhattan, right? And we were at this event together, and all these people are talking about their like financial models. And he turned to me, he's like, Lisa, my big problem in New York City, I have had to develop these big holes to put the elevators in, okay? If it rains really hard, the water goes into these holes and then it floods the subway system. That's my problem, right? So now he's got a pain point, right? Because there's these unprecedented water, and it happens very fast. He's got to figure out what does he do to protect the job site so it doesn't flood out the subway system. Can you imagine, David, how this goes down, right? So they're working on upgrading the elevator. There's a huge rain. It floods. They shut down like the Lexington Avenue line. This is pandemonium in New York. Mm-hmm. Pandemonium. So they need to be more proactive to figure out how do you handle it? Because things are changing. So, for example, the biggest project, and I'm sorry to be New York centric, but that's where I'm from, it's called IPC. So there were a series of big hurricanes that happened that flooded lower Manhattan. And there was, a bunch of buildings damaged. It was a disaster. So now what they're doing is the federal government has provided money to build basically resiliency walls around Manhattan. So the first one is along the west side.
How do you guys have money for this? You guys have money for this?
Federal government, man, as I told you.
Yeah.
Who gets the money? Chuck Schumer's very good at getting money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like everything else. The squeaky wheel, gets the grease. So.
Why hasn't Procore been able to be dethroned as the main system of record? What have they done right?
Really smart because they have a great customer experience. They have really good marketing. They get people kind of committed and using the system. And it's just like, it's like your Apple phone. Okay. Are you an Apple customer or are you an Android customer?
You're an Apple customer.
So what Apple does is they create a closed garden. Procore is doing the same thing. They make it easy for you. They make you feel like it's special to be part of the Apple or the Procore community. And so it's too much pain points for you to switch to any, you know, to a different provider. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's just human behavior because someone feels comfortable with Procore. They know how it works. It's integrated in their ERP system.
It's good enough.
And so again, you know, the Android phone might be better than your Apple phone, but like, you know how your Apple phone works. You can message with your friends. All your photographs are there. Are you going to change? No. It's the same thing with Procore.
So what does the construction stack look like? You know, the technology stack. There's ERP, I'm sure. There's some kind of field service management. What are some of the other kind of tools? There's also accounting systems.
There's payment system. It's tracking change orders, which is like if it was supposed to start X, it's supposed to cost Y. There's systems, there's safety issues. Like, so one of the requirements is you have to do a daily safety log to make sure that everyone's trained and, you know, they've been trained, they've checked the manuals, because if somebody falls off the side of a building, which happens like more than you'd care, you from a fiduciary responsibility and from for your insurance, you have to be able to train like, okay, all these people got trained, this shouldn't have happened, right? So they really look at the EMR rating. You need to have technology. Also, a lot of people have BIM technology, which is building information services. So there's a requirement that when you hand over the building, it's all done on the integrated drawings.
Yeah, so, you have like a digital copy to kind of hand somebody.
Yeah, a digital copy. So there's not, you know, the problem in construction is that there's not standardization, right? So each developer or each agencies has different requirements. So you can't say like, okay, it's all going to be the same because construction's bespoke. Everything's like slightly different.
Right.
And you can even look at, you know, two buildings that are, you know, two skyscrapers that are being built next to each other. They're different. So that's one of the challenges, is the lack of standardization. And there's been a lot of pressure in the industry as also nomenclature, right? So if you want to do an estimating system, is it a door? Is it a walkway? Is it a passage? Like, they don't have a standard, you know, requirement that a door is called a door and not, you know. So then when you want to kind of bid on something or do an estimating package, it's not so easy, because one system might call it a door and somebody else might call it a passageway. So there's this big pressure to have standardization, which kind of is a journey. It's not there yet.
No, yeah, it's a big journey. I could imagine. What are you excited about this year?
What am I excited about this year? I'm really excited about using more digital twins for assessment of infrastructure. So my personal kind of pain point is I think that major infrastructure, we're talking bridges and tunnels especially, are often in very poor state of repair. And my hope is, you know, it's very tragic, but the tragedy that happened and the vision of, you know, this bridge collapsing, I think is a wake-up call to a lot of Americans that our bridges are in really bad shape. And what happens is people see a pothole, because you go into the pothole, it busts your car, you call up your congressman. So it's visible. There's a lot of risk in the system that's invisible, that's actually very, very problematic. And we need to fix it sooner rather than later. So going back to this infamous gateway tunnel. So there was three former mayors of New Jersey ago, there was this movement to get Gateway, which was called ARC at the time, fixed. And it was going to cost $8 billion to fix it. There was a change of administration, and the new administration decided that was a waste of money. So instead, they used the money to fix potholes. So now, fast forward, it's going to cost $30 billion. And you know, if they say it's 30, it's going to be more than that. So what I'm optimistic about is if we have to like sort of be more systematic about what needs to be fixed. And you know, in your own life, a stitch in time saves nine. So like there's a bridge in Rhode Island and they've declared that it's, you know, has to be taken down. I suspect if they had fixed it earlier, it wouldn't have had to be taken down.
Yeah. A lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. And, you know, we talked about, again, there's $1.2 trillion, but the cost is $2.6 trillion. So how are you going to allocate those dollars? You don't have enough money.
Right.
If you do it the old-fashioned way.
Lisa, if I'm a construction tech company, I want to get a hold of you. I want to learn more about construction tech. How does one get a hold of you?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn. So reach out to me, Lisa, G-I-U-F-F-R-A-D-S. Or Turf Advisory, just Google us. We have a contact us page. We're very passionate about construction technology. And I want to emphasize, we come up with this from a lens of finance, rate of return, making money. So when you come to us with an idea, it has to be something that solves a real pain point, but also improves those very pathetic margins.
Right, right. Demonstrable ROI.
Yep. All about ROI.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Capital Stack. If you like what you heard, please like it, subscribe, tell a friend, and we will be back next week. And I'm doing another thing where I want to talk to my podcast listeners because I want to know what's good and what's bad, what you find valuable and what's not, because I want to bring you a better product. And you know how to reach me? That's davidpaul.com, or just reach out to me on LinkedIn. All right. Thanks. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Capital Stack Podcast. Make sure to share this with someone you know that can benefit from this content. Remember to support this show by rating, reviewing, and subscribing. David Paul is the founder and general partner at DWP Capital. All opinions expressed by David and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of DWP Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. David and guests may maintain positions in the securities discussed on this podcast.